Okay, let's begin in 2 Samuel chapter 14. Now, I want to contrast something in chapter 14 with something in chapter 13. But in chapter 14, you have Joab, and he goes to Tekoa, and he sees one of the wise men, wise women there, and he is going to tell her to go into David, and he's going to tell her what to say. So he is going to put words in her mouth, and she's going to walk in before David, and she's going to start to speak words, and she's going to say certain things, and she starts to say these things. And this whole story that we'll look at, we're just going to look at bits and pieces of it, this whole thing that she goes in and tells David is a made-up story. So in verse 3, Joab says, "Go to the king and speak to him in this manner." So Joab put the words in her mouth. And the woman, when the woman of Tekoa spoke to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and prostrated herself and said, "Help, O king." Then the king said to her, "What troubles you?" And she answered, "Indeed, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Now your maidservant had two sons, and the two fought with each other in the field, and there was no one to part them, and one struck the other and killed him. And now the whole family has risen up against your maidservant," and they said, "Deliver him who struck his brother, that we may execute him for the life of his brother, whom he killed, and we will destroy the heir also, so they would extinguish my ember that is left, and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant on the earth." Then David said to the woman, "Go to your house, and I will give you orders concerning you." So remember that all these things that she's saying to David, Joab's telling her. And I'm assuming they make up this story. There may be some fact, but nevertheless, he's telling her what to say to David. So here's the king. And he's sitting there or standing there, and he's listening to this. Now, I was thinking that if you're in a position of authority like David was, and you're in a position to judge, you would have to be able to be, in a place where the Lord could show you things so that you could discern whether something is correct or whether it's not. That's obvious. So she goes on here, verse 12. So she says certain things. David says a few things to her. Then verse 12, "Therefore the woman said, 'Please let your maidservant speak another word to my lord the king.' And he said, 'Say on.' So the woman said, 'Why then have you schemed such a thing against the people of God? For the king speaks this thing as one who is guilty, in that the king does not bring his banished one home again.'" And he's catching this is speaking about Absalom. So in verse 18, "Then David answered and said to the woman, 'Please do not hide from me anything that I ask you.' And the woman said, 'Please let my lord the king speak.' So the king said, 'Is the hand of Joab with you in all of this?' And the woman answered and said, 'As you live, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right hand or to the left from anything that my lord the king has spoken. For your servant Joab commanded me, and he put all these words in my mouth,'" and so on. And so David was able to discern through what was going on, what she was saying, or however he did it, he was able to discern that this was not coming from her, this was coming from someone else. Chapter 13. So wouldn't you say that David was able to see and perceive. As the man of God, as the king, he was able to perceive what was happening. Very good thing. Chapter 13, verse 1. "After this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her." So he loved his sister. "And Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend, well, if you want to call him that, whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man. The King James says he was a very subtle man. And another translation, I believe, uses the word shrewd. I don't know if you've ever encountered someone who was very, very shrewd. I remember when I was younger, living at home, we had a neighbor. And any time he came around and he would talk to my parents or to anyone in the neighborhood, he was always doing it in this shrewd way to try to get certain things from them. And he managed to do that, even for my family. So people can be very, very shrewd, and they can see things and start planning, you know, around them, or to get what they want, they'll do certain things. So here he is, this Jonadab, he's a very crafty man. Verse 4, and he said to him, to Amnon, why are you, the king's son, becoming thin day after day? Now, do you think that anyone else noticed this? I wonder if somebody noticed that he was losing weight. I mean, usually somebody loses a lot of weight, you can tell, especially if you're around them a lot. Will you tell me, you know, why? Amnon said to him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. He didn't say my half-sister, he said my brother Absalom's sister. So Jonadab said to him, lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, that's David, the king, say to him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat from her hand. Verse 7. And David sent home, so David comes in, David sent home to Tamar saying, now go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house and he was lying down and she prepared some food for him. Verse 11. Now when she had brought them the food to him to eat, he took hold of her and he said to her, come lie with me, my sister. So he rapes her. So in chapter 14, David is able to perceive what is going on with this story from this woman from Tekoa, coming from Joab. In this instance, he does not see and perceive what went on with Tamar, or in particular with Amnon, what was going on in his heart and in his life wanting his sister. So the point I want to make with this is that you don't see everything. A man of God can be a man of God and see things, but the man of God does not always see everything. And anyone that tells you, well, you should have saw this or you should have saw that, well, David was a man after God's own heart, and yet he did not see this thing right in his household, right before him, right under his nose. And his son getting even thinner and thinner. Never saw it. And I'm not saying that to condemn David, but I'm saying that we will see certain things, but other things we will not see for whatever reason. You know, maybe the Lord has some reason why we don't see something, but it's nice when it comes to things, I think, that are extremely important, things related to the kingdom of God, things related to our own walk with God. In my experience, the Lord opens the eye. He shows you enough so that you can and I can walk in the right way, walk in the right path, to make the decision or whatever it may be, or not to decide to do a certain thing. And that's really nice. I really like that. Okay, back to let's just finish chapter 13 here. Verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years, this is 2 full years after this occurs. And Absalom, remember, he knew what took place with Tamar. And you know how people are sometimes. You do something to them, be it unintentional or intentional, they kind of file that in their mind. And they wait for an opportunity to either throw it in your face or get back to you. You know, get back at you. That's the way people are. And you know, you may do something. I know I did a particular thing and never did it. I didn't do it on purpose, but
that person throws that back at you later.
So this is 2 years later here in verse 23, that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim, so Absalom invited all the king's sons. Verse 28. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, so he's inviting Amnon. See, he's biding his time, waiting for the opportunity to take his revenge. Now, I have said this before, that a lot of the things on TV are based on revenge. But we are not to, you know, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. And the second thing here is that that means that you leave things in the Lord's hand, but you don't hold on to the attitude and say, well, the Lord's going to get them. The Lord's going to get you. Because that's not the right attitude either. You let it go, and you let the Lord take care of things. And if vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, he'll take care of things in his time. You don't have to be concerned about it. You don't even have to look back at that. You don't even have to be concerned or worried about that. That's up, these things are up to the Lord. All we need to do is keep our hearts right before the Lord and keep the right motivation in our heart and let the Lord do what he will. So in verse 28, now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. So he's plotting this. And in verse 32, the king, middle of the verse, and the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. So he had servants kill Amnon. For by command, the King James says by appointment. By command, and that word deals with the mouth. By mouth. In other words, Absalom commanded, or he spoke with his mouth, saying to his servants to kill Amnon. Now, what Amnon did was not right. It was an evil thing, very evil thing. But see, look at the world today. Isn't there a lot of evil in the world? Oh, there's a lot of things going on that are really, really bad. And God sees them, doesn't he? Does God intervene all the time with these things? No, he doesn't. With certain things, at certain times, the Lord intervenes, but he lets things go and does things in his time. And even if things continue on in this life, there is a final judgment when things will be set right. Everything will be set right. But taking things into our own hand, that's our nature. That's in our old nature. But we want to take things into our own hand. I've said that before. And do it and change it, or to be like God and execute judgment on someone for what they've done or what they've said. Has anybody ever done something to you? Has anybody ever said anything to you that wasn't right? Has any Christian ever done something to you and said something to you that wasn't right? And you wanted to just go straighten them out. Because they are not acting in the character of Lord. Well, what's that? That's not my business. That's none of our business. The Lord will take care of these things. Because, see, fakers can fake, and some people will see it. But fakers can't fake God. They cannot fake him. He sees it all. He knows it all. And what a person becomes, what you become, what I become, and the rewards that are given now and later will be in proportion to what you have become. So if I allow certain things, like I just had to counsel someone just recently, last week as a matter of fact, and I told him, I said, you cannot continue, I did it very gently, you cannot continue to do and say these things that you're saying, because when you start to talk like this, it starts this flame in you, and in about 5 minutes, they're all fired up, and they're all mad,
and they're all, out of sorts.
And I said, look at yourself. I said, don't allow these things to trip you up. Don't allow them to keep you from becoming more like Christ, to be Christ-like. That's not just the word, be Christ-like. Being conformed to his image. No, being conformed is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It would be nice if it did, but it somehow works. So to be conformed is a process. And your being conformed, my being conformed, much of that will take place in and through our circumstances and how we react to them. So you can't fake that. So Lord, I can't say, well, the reason why I did this is because of Mike. My excuse is Mike. Well, the Israelites had an excuse for not going into the promised land, but excuses are not, sometimes not reasons, not real reasons. They're different. And so the Lord says, well, it's not him, it's what's going on in you that's causing you to fall short of the glory of God. We're all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Well, we can still fall short of the glory of God. He wants to put his glory in us. Well, he wants a clean vessel. He can't do certain things that we're polluted. So in verse 32, we're by command, or the mouth of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. So something was placed in him that he couldn't allow the Lord to take care of it. He had to do it. He had to take care of it. He had to get in there. He had to make sure that justice in his mind was, executed. So he has him killed. So because he does that, he flees to Gezer, and he stays there 3 years. Now, chapter 14, so Joab, verse 1, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. So he's going to go to David. David is going to say, okay, go get Absalom, who has been gone for 3 years because he killed his brother, or half-brother, whatever it is. Me, I don't go by halves. You have the movie, his, hers, and ours. Well, if the Lord brings the family together, they're all ours. That's the way I see it. His, hers, now this is ours. No. So he kills his brother and he flees. So now Joab is going to get orders from David to go and get him. Now in chapter 14, verse 25. Now, who can tell me something about Absalom, other than he's David's son?
Is he one of the older brothers?
I think that Amnon was the oldest one, the one he killed.
I know he had long
tell
hair.
Me something about him,
hair.
Not...
Huh? He had long hair.
Yes, he had long hair. Real long. Too. As a matter of fact, that was his undoing in a way. Well, this verse here tells you something. Verse 25. Now, in all Israel, there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. Well, you talk about getting a big head. Oh, brother, you're so handsome. The girls probably thought he was, oh my goodness. There he comes. They're probably all staring at him. Isn't he beautiful? Oh, I'd love to be his wife. Or one of his wives. He is so good looking. And then, he hears these things, I'm sure. And probably the men. You say, he's a handsome guy. He's handsome. You know when a guy's handsome. Guys, you can say to a guy, he's handsome. I mean, it's on track. I'm saying man. So he's hearing these things. And it's nothing like, hearing things and then your head getting bigger and swelling. I believe the Lord has an antidote for that. It's a pin. It's a spiritual pin that he comes and he pokes your head. And it deflates your ego. And then he takes you down where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be, like Jesus, humble, meek, and lowly. Jesus was meek and lowly in heart. And you know that if we want to walk with Jesus, really walk with him? We're going to walk with him in the meek and lowly place, the humble place. So if the Lord is bringing you down and humbling you, that is such a work of the Spirit.
and allow that to happen. Be surrendered to that. And then not only that, but once he humbles you, stay there. Try your best to stay there in that place. That's the safest place to be. Running, and David talks about running into God. Humility is a strong tower. You wouldn't think it would be, but it is a strong tower. So it says here, there's nobody like him for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was not a blemish in him.
Wow.
And when he cut the hair of his head at the end of the year, he cut it because it was heavy on him. And when he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels according to the king's standards. I think that's like 6 or 7 pounds. That's pretty heavy. It's what? How much is the average head?
What was that verse you just read?
Verse 26.
I think the head is it 10 pounds?
But even if your head is 10, even 15 pounds, to have 7 pounds of hair, that's a lot of hair.
Wow.
But anyway, what does the Lord say about it? Let me read it real quick, because we read this, we looked at this. For the Lord does not see man as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance. Oh, he has all these good looks. Oh, she is such a beautiful woman. The Lord showed me this years ago when I was single, that I had to marry the will of God. That's what the Bible was seeking on a wife. I said, okay, Lord, I want to marry your will. And I didn't care. If the girl was beautiful or she wasn't, it didn't matter to me. The Lord knows my heart. I knew that I was going to need the right woman who would have to be able to put up with me studying and ministering and all this other stuff, because that, at first, not so much now. I mean, I can sit down and a lot of these things come right together very quickly, not always, but a lot of times. But years ago, for example, when I studied the book of Song of Solomon, I did a verse-for-verse study in that book, and I never spent so much time. I spent gobs of time, hours and hours and hours. I would guess that I was spending probably over 20 hours a week studying for one class. And there's my wife. I mean, if I have the wrong woman, I marry the wrong woman, there's contention in the home, believe me. And she's always been very, very helpful and very supportive, of the Lord doing what he's doing with me and using me and so on. But that's not always the case. So, good looks. Good looks. You see somebody from high school, in their high school, you open up your high school yearbook, and they take the prettiest girl with the most handsome guy. And that's then go to your 50th reunion. And then you see something different. When they say beauty is transitory, so where is the real beauty? It's in the inner man, but you can't convince people of that. You can't even convince some Christians of that. Because they judge and they look after the natural. And I know a man that, he met a woman, and he said, he's Christian, he says, I have to marry that woman. She's so beautiful, I love her. And they were married within 6 months. Now, it was fine, but the point is that that's not the real reason you're already married. I would much rather marry the will of God than anything or anyone. So he says that man looks on the outside, but the Lord looks upon the heart. And that means even when a person's young or when they're middle-aged or when they're older, it doesn't change. That doesn't change. The Lord still looks upon the heart. Because a person can be very, very handsome, like Absalom, and never attain to anything that the Lord wants in his life, and die and face judgment, the judgment seat of Christ, where the Lord will say, what did you do with your life? What have you been doing? What's going on with you? And then, the person's speechless. Whereas if we can penetrate the natural, penetrate, and what I mean is past, look past that, and say that beauty is that which the Lord does on the inside. Remember whenever Jesus took Peter, James, and John up to the Mount of Transfiguration. They didn't know what was going to happen. And they saw the Lord transfigured before them. And they saw a beauty they never, ever saw or realized. They were so, so taken aback by that, that they didn't know what to say. And Peter said, let's make three statues. And I don't know what, because they were so overwhelmed with the beauty that they saw. But see, we are shackled with flesh, the natural body. We're shackled with this, so that it takes the Spirit of God, it takes a work of the Holy Spirit in a person to enable them to look past the natural to what truly is in the heart. And even at that, you know, we can still look back. And we can still judge after the natural. I share this with you, I think. I teach at different places. I don't know what I teach where sometimes. But a friend of mine, I think I did share this, but a friend of mine, when we first went to Bible school, you know, he said, this guy, he's our teacher. What in the world can he have in the Lord? Look at him, he's up there, he's a bald head, and he's heavy, overweight, and what can he? Well, he found out later that the man had something in God and something to give. But see, we, even as Christians, we're so apt to want to judge after the natural rather than, you know, letting the Lord teach us. It says in Proverbs, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. Beauty is passing. It's passing. But the inner beauty never passes. And Jesus said, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness. And in Isaiah 1:6, Isaiah says this, well, the Lord says through Isaiah, relating to Judah, from the sole of the foot even to the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. Wow. They have not been closed or bound or sewed with ointment. So he says, there are wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. And the Lord looks to the inner man and he sees that with some people. That's what he sees. And so he tries to bring healing to them. So in verse 32, this is still chapter 14, and Absalom answered Joab, look, I'm sending you, saying, come here, so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to be there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me. This is Absalom. When he came back to Jerusalem, David told Joab, he's not allowed to see my face. It's kind of like a rebuke to Absalom. And so here, finally, Absalom wants to go and see David. And then in verse 33, he sees him, he bows down. It's interesting. It says, and he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. But the thing is that even though, you know, we're just talking about the natural, you're looking at the outward. So Absalom bows down to David in the natural, in the physical, but he never bows down to him in his heart, because right after that he rebels against David. And so the natural appearance does not always reflect the heart. Most of the time it does not. So in chapter 15, this is Absalom's conspiracy. He rebels. In verse 1, after this it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. So you see this right away. It says that he provided himself. He did it. He took the initiative. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision that Absalom would call to him and say, what city are you from? And he would say, your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you. Moreover, Absalom would say, Oh, that I were a judge in the land, and everyone who had a suit or cause would come to me, and I would give him justice. And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. So the kisses of an enemy are what? Deceitful. And a flattering tongue. Beware of the flattering tongue. I wish I could tell young women that. I wish they could believe me. Really. I used to sit at work sometime and I used to watch. I worked in a building, well, I worked in various places. The one place that I worked at, there was about 100 employees. And probably maybe 15, 20 women. And I would watch sometimes when one of the girls would sit at the lunchroom, one of the guys would come and sit down. And it could be innocent. But if that continued with, you know, every day, I've seen where a guy would start to flatter a married woman. She's, you know, oh, your husband never listens to you, does he? No, he doesn't. He's a jerk. Well, I'll listen to you. You know, what's going on with you? You play upon her feelings, play upon her emotions, play upon maybe some need that her husband's not meeting in her life, and then start to flatter her, and he's after one thing. And I've seen it. And I've seen even marriage break up because the two get closer and closer. They go out, they go to a motel, and things escalate. And before you know it, I saw an individual. And he left his wife and two children and went with a woman. And they moved out west. So this is not an uncommon thing. Flattery can be a very dangerous thing. Now, it's okay if I compliment and say, you know, I like your shirt. That makes no big deal. But you have to be careful, especially a young woman. Be careful when the flattery comes. It's done for a reason. So Absalom he's flattering the people, and it works. He basically marries the people. He marries Israel. See, remember Judah and Israel came to David. He was the king. Now Absalom is using, what measures can I say? He's using deceitful measures. He's using carnal measures that many people know and are familiar with to take the hearts of another. Take the people. Verse 6. In verse 5 he said, he put out his hand and take the individual and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Stole the hearts. He had a strategy to bring them over to his side. Verse 13. Now the messengers came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. So it's funny. I noticed this, and of course I noticed this because I've studied and taught Kings and other books of the Bible. You see this, it seems to me that Israel seems to move more toward the incorrect way. Whereas Judah seems to move more in the correct way. You see this whenever the 10 tribes of Israel break off. And then you had Judah, it was after Solomon. Solomon's son. They break off. You have Israel and you have Judah. Same thing here. David brings them together. Absalom takes, not Judah, he takes Israel. And if you remember that Israel became captive to the Assyrians and that Judah became captive to the Babylonians, but there was like 150 or some years apart between the two. So Israel went into captivity long before Judah, because at least Judah had at least three or four kings of all their kings that were godly kings. So here you see again where, or maybe even before, you see that Israel, the men of Israel, seem to be swayed very easily. And Absalom, he does that. And they tell David, and David knows that If he doesn't flee Jerusalem, that Absalom is going to come and kill him because he has all the armies now of Israel again. So in verse 16, we're not going to have time to look at all this, but we'll look at one more verse here. This is verse 16, chapter 15. Then the king, David, went out with all his household after he's fleeing. But the king left 10 women, 10 concubines to keep the house. Now, chapter 16. In chapter 16, in the very beginning here, there's two extremes that are seen. The first deals with Ziba, who is Mephibosheth. Do you know who Mephibosheth is? Jonathan's son. Okay. Ziba is his servant. See, which verses should we read? We'll read them in a minute here. So, his servant, in the first, I don't know how many verses, two or three verses, four verses, Mephibosheth's service comes, a servant comes, and he brings David and his household. Remember, they had left. So he brings them donkeys, he brings them food. So this was, he misrepresents Mephibosheth. We're not going to look at that, but the point here I want you to see is that he goes out and he takes them food. And when you're out there, we're talking about 10 people. David took his whole household. There was quite a few people there. And they go out, and all David's men go out. So he takes them food and some animals to ride on, and he shows kindness. The second thing, there is a man from Saul's household named Shimei. You know anything about him? He's cursing David. So you see these two things here, two extremes in this chapter. So in verse 5, now when King David came to Behoram, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera, coming from there. He came out cursing continually as he came. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men, they're there with David, the mighty men, were on his right hand and on his left hand. Also, Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, or get out. Some said, get out, be gone. You bloodthirsty man, you rogue. Now, why would he call him a bloodthirsty man? Maybe because, possibly when David gives up the sons of Saul to the Gibeonites. That chapter, I believe, is not in chronological order, I think. He calls him a bloodthirsty man. He calls him a rogue. Verse 8. The Lord has brought upon you, David, all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. Now, what he's saying isn't true. None of it's true. But he's so angry that he says all these things. And you know, that's what happens sometimes when anger takes hold. People say things, and they say things. Whether they're right or whether they're wrong, they say them. And so he's saying these things, and he's accusing David. But what had taken place with David was according to the word of God, according to the prophet Samuel, what he said. Now, in these two contrasting things, you have a group, or the man Ziba, the servants, they show David kindness. Shimei, on the other hand, he's cursing David. Two extremes. And in your walk as a Christian, you and I will experience these extremes, where there will be those who are kind to us, and there will be those who come out and curse us and throw stones at us, spiritually. Maybe. So there's those extremes that we'll have to deal with. David deals with them. So in verse 8, can we read that one? Yes. Verse 9. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please, let me go over and take off his head.
Well, this phrase, the sons of Zeruiah, is mentioned twice. And both times, David says, what do I have to do with you? These men, Joab, what's his name here?
Abishai.
Abishai and Ahithophel, I believe, was the third one. They were the sons of Zeruiah. And these men were mighty men. They were warriors. They went out to battle. And that's what they knew. They knew how to fight. They knew how to battle. They knew how to wield the sword. But see, that's not all they should know. See, there are other things. We may know one aspect of things, but that's not all. We need to know other aspects of things. And David, through his example, is showing them another aspect of the Lord, because he shows Shimei mercy. Verse 11, and David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son who came out from my own body seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamin, let him alone and let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. David could have had his men, they wanted to, go and take the guy's head off. Hey, somebody ever really make you mad? You'd like to go take their head off. They could have had his head taken off. But David is a man after God's own heart. And he is seeing mercy to this man. And so if the Lord is showing him mercy, then David's showing him mercy. Now these other men, they could have learned this by example. You know, we'll learn things by example. We'll have an example before us. Maybe somebody that's living the way they should as a Christian. And you see that example. And you can follow that example and learn other things other than being a man of war. So, I want to show you something because this is very, very interesting. Let's put this in perspective. Chapter 19. So David lets this man curse him. David lets this man throw stones at him. Can you let someone throw stones at you? Cannot. See, what kind of character do we have? Now, I'll put this in perspective. Chapter 19, verse 18. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now, Shimei, the same guy, the son of Gera, this is the guy he spared, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. Then he said to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord, the king, left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. So this man repents of what he did to David. If David would allow his mighty man there to cut off his head, then the opportunity for this repentance in this guy's heart, Shimei's heart, would have never happened. So we don't know. It's better to show the character of the Lord than to take things in our own hand and wield the sword. Remember that when they came to take Jesus to crucify him, Peter took out his sword. He cut off the ear of the servant. What Jesus did. No, Peter. He takes the ear and he puts it on. So, you know, as a Christian, we don't want to cut off people's ear, because then the Lord's going to have to come and heal them. We need to allow the Lord to work through us and His Spirit to work through us and His character to come out and move out from us to people. So there may be a time when, you know, the sword may be apropos. But there may be a time whenever we never take it out of the sheath. Did you know where it talks about putting on the full armor of God? Who wants to teach on that? Take unto you the sword of what? Sword of what? Spirit. Are you sure it's what it says?
Take unto you the sword, not your sword, like people say. I'll take my sword. No.
When you actually look at that, it means, let me demonstrate this. It means you take the sword of the Spirit unto you. That it works in you. Take unto you the sword of the Spirit. And it's His sword. Of the Spirit. Well, if it's the sword of the Spirit, and it's used by the Spirit, and we're walking in the Spirit, then we won't be cutting people's ears off.
There's a difference. There's a difference there. I wanted to look at one more thing. Maybe we'll set it for next week. I don't have enough time. But the thing I like is that the Lord is patient with us. I mean, He is so patient with us. And even if we miss it, you know, the Lord will come and He helps us. And, you know, He's more patient with me sometimes than I am with people because I don't have all of His character. But He's working on me. He's working on you. And it's nice to allow the Spirit of God in your life and allow Him to do things in us, not just for a short period of time, I'm talking about for a long period of time, for, you know, years. And you'll find that when you come into certain situations, like I know how I would have reacted to certain things before. I know because the area I grew up was a tough area, and you either had to fight or get beat up. So you learned to fight, and that was the way it was. I would almost had to fight my way to the barber shop. I hated to go to the barber shop because I knew where I had to go. You know, in the town, and I knew what I had to deal with, and I had to go cut them through all the alleys and everything to avoid certain guys. And so I learned to fight, and I didn't take anything off anybody, because once you did, that just opened the door for them to bully you. And bullying back then was different than bullying now. Bullying now, it seems that they're, at least in some cases, they try to correct it. Back then, it was like a free-for-all. And so I know how I would react when certain things were said or done to me. One individual years ago, where I was working, we were just about six of us, it was the end of the day, end of the tour, 15 minutes before we were leaving for the day, and we were all standing around and moving around, and this one guy gets in my face and starts yelling and screaming at me, and he has this does fist clench, and I really didn't do anything to him. So I just looked at him, and I just went like this, and turned and walked away slowly. And, you know, as I said, you know, the Bible says a soft answer turns away wrath. Well, even not saying anything can turn away wrath. And I let it go because I was a Christian. That didn't bother me. I mean, I didn't do anything, and even if I did, I didn't do anything to deserve what he was doing, so it didn't matter. So I forgot about the situation, went on my way, and it like it never happened. And about, I think it was like 7 years later, there was a guy at the altar at the church, and I looked and said, he was familiar. Oh, I used to work with him. And after service, he came up and he said, do you remember? And he's recounting this situation. He went up to the altar, he repented. Came to the Lord, whatever. That he says, do you remember when I got in your face and I was going to punch you and you didn't say a word? You didn't defend yourself? Did you just turn? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like I completely forgot about it until he said that. I said, yeah, I remember that now. He says, I want to apologize to you today. And I said to him, I said, no. He said, now it's on you. I said, when somebody gets up in your face, now you show them mercy.
But see, I didn't know the Lord had done something in me. I knew how I would have reacted before, but I didn't know he did that. When I was in a situation, it was just there. So the Lord will work in your life. He'll do things. You don't think the Lord's doing anything. If you're walking with him, he's doing certain things in you, and that will be manifest in certain situations that you're in. And you will be surprised. You will be shocked at what's there, or not, maybe what's not there in you anymore. Uh-huh. And you'll say, wow, geez, I said, Lord, I didn't know you did that. This is tremendous. That's why I say this Christian walk is fantastic. Because only the Lord can change our hearts. He's the only one who can change us down deep inside, in the core of our being, and make us what we were never, and cause us to react in a way, a godly way, that we would never act like that or react that way before. So it's almost like a miracle. I see these things at work. This is like even some of the things I've been going through recently, and I say, I know what I'd love to do, but I wouldn't want to do that. But it's just like, it's not even in me. There's nothing in me that would, you know, want to retaliate or do anything evil. It's just not there. So it's good to walk with the Lord. It's good to stretch out your hand and say, Lord, I'm surrendering to you. I'm going to submit to you. Because he'll do things in you that later on you will see. Later on you will know. And even if you fail, the Lord's forgiving. He'll say, get up, brush yourself off, let's continue on. But you'll find out that something will come up and you will act differently in it than you ever did before. And you will know that it wasn't you. You will know that all the praise and all the glory be to Jesus Christ. Because you could never do it on your own. You could never act that way on your own. You could never produce these qualities in you. You could never do it. That's why all the glory and all the praise goes to Jesus. Amen?